From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made as we go on through our very warm Sacramento summer. Where, of course, you could be in the mountains, I guess, listening to us. So good for you if you are. Appreciate you being with us on the Bishop's Hour. We appreciate all of those fine organizations and businesses that provide underwriting for the Bishop's Hour. And we hope that you will support them as they have supported us. Well, we're pleased and honored to have Ned DeLessi, the Executive Director of the California Catholic Conference, join us now. Ned, good day to you.
Good morning. Good day. Good to hear your voice, too.
Indeed. Ned, Executive Director, and yet I understand they have now named your replacement as you go off into, I'm sure it won't be retirement, but in theory it is, I guess.
Well, it's a retirement from the California Catholic Conference,
yes.
From doing public policy on behalf of the church for these 31 years.
Wow.
21 of them in California here as the executive director of the California Catholic Conference, and 10 in Washington State as the director there. And,
so
they have named him my successor. So.
Did you come to California specifically for this job?
I did. I was invited by my predecessor, Monsignor Jim Peterson, may he rest in peace, to apply for the position some 21 years ago. And so I did, and was chosen by the bishops here to step into this role. And it's been a privilege and a pleasure to do this for, I never thought I'd be here this long. So it's quite fascinating. And, it's, again, been an honor. But it was time. This is a good time at the end of a 2-year session, and I'm very pleased with my successor, Andy Rivas.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy comes to us recently as the Director of Government Affairs and Public Relations for the LA Archdiocese. So, certainly knows California politics fairly intimately. And previous to that time, he was the executive director of the Texas Catholic Conference.
Oh, wow.
For about 6 years. And before that, he worked for Catholic Charities of USA and worked for the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops in D.C. And prior to that time, he was a staff person for Senator John McCain. So he has a intimate and professional knowledge of politics, and certainly a very clear and specific knowledge of the ecclesial politics, if you will. The church reculture out of which we operate.
Wow. All the things on his resume there, he must be about 120 years old.
No. I'm not sure how old Andy is. I'm not supposed to ask that on job applications anymore.
So, no, that's, you're not allowed. You're not allowed.
Yeah, but, Andy's of an age, perhaps about an age that was when I came here. So anyway, I think we can look forward to at least a decade or more of Andy's tenure as a very successful Catholic Conference director.
Do you work with him in his role at the Archdiocese of Los Angeles?
I certainly do. And, it was one of the things I had encouraged the Archbishop Gomez to consider when he came here. We hadn't had in some time someone working in public policy for the L.A. Archdiocese. And in California, the L.A. Archdiocese, as populous and dynamic as it is, has a third of all the congressional representatives from California in their archdiocese, and a third of all the legislators in California, senators and assembly people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important and significant for them to have a very, working and positive relationship with those members. And so to have Andy working there has just been a pleasure. And over these last number of years has been a real colleague to me.
Now, are his offices in L.A. or are they up here?
They are. They're in L.A. And he'll be starting here August 6th. So.
Very good. And you... Tell me, you voluntarily left Seattle for the summers of Sacramento?
Well, the legislature takes the month of July off, so for the first number of years, I chance to go back and visit family in Seattle during the month of July. So it worked out very well. But, you know, I mean, those of us who live here, we know how wonderful it is.
Of course it is.
You know, it may get a little hot sometimes, but you don't have to stand in the sun.
Well, that's true. That's true.
It's beautiful. It's a dry, beautiful heat, and the Delta breeze comes up in the evening, and it's hard to pass on this quality of
weather. I was sitting on the front porch with my wife last night about 8 o'clock, you know, early evening. And I said, you know, right now the temperature's just perfect.
Yeah, it was about 82 or 83.
Yeah.
And then I was sitting there relaxing at the River Cascade, and the Delta breeze came up. And
yep.
How magnificent.
Yeah, very, very good.
Yeah, so anyway, but yes, it's I did come here from Seattle, so.
Well, two beautiful parts of the country, Seattle and Sacramento.
They are. Yeah. They are both home to me now. So,
oh, that's wonderful.
But, it was time to step aside and let someone new step in. And the end of a 2-year session was a good time.
Oh, that's very good. Well, I'm a Portland native, so I'm not supposed to like people from Seattle, but.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I was in Portland visiting the Archbishop there a while back, and that's one dynamic city also. I
mean, yes.
You know, Seattle has cranes everywhere in the building, and it's transformed from the Seattle I knew, and Portland's not far behind. They were building everywhere downtown.
Yeah, see, last time I was in Seattle, they were building some underground thing that I thought they were never going to finish it.
Yeah, well, it looks like they're going to finish it here shortly.
So, is that right?
Thank you for taking the time to ask me that about the job. It's I'm going to try and finish out the session here because we have a number of pieces of legislation that are significant, and while Andy comes in and gets himself working there, I'll try and follow through on at least 3 or 4 pieces of legislation that are very, very significant for us this year.
So what specifically are you looking at?
Well, certainly our listeners are well aware of SB 320, which is the bill to require our public college campuses and universities, clinics, to offer abortion pills to students.
Mm-hmm.
Besides the fact that, abortion is wrong, this is just so pathetic, it's hard to imagine that the state's going to be all in on requiring and offering, one option for women, and have the blatant, sense to call that choice. I mean, it's not choice. I mean, this is basically, when a young woman is struggling in college and finds herself, pregnant, to offer her only one choice.
That's right.
And that is to abort her baby. And to have our college campus clinics offer that is pathetic. I mean, the universities, you're required to have health insurance at UC, so you can go get whatever health things you would choose at CS. They expect you to have health insurance, and we offer a cheap one for students. And the other irony is the students pay for the health services at the clinic with their student fees.
Mm-hmm.
And they're supposed to vote to choose what services they want offered, and nobody's asking them to vote for this.
Yeah, it's not, they have no say in it.
Right. When it was put forward, initially paid for by student fees, the students objected last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so they removed that, and now we're going to have, Planned Parenthood, another aficionado, donate, to a commission that was not set up to do that. It was set up to review the status of women and girls in California. We're going to have them disperse money to the universities. But again, without ever asking the students if this is something they feel they want or need, and certainly without the option to offer young women the opportunity to go to our own Sacramento Life Center, one of the fine licensed crisis pregnancy clinics. And so anyway, it just, I'm sure for our listeners, it calls us, and we've got to continue to work on that. The bill's up in the assembly, and so we've got to work that end of it and work with Californians for Life and a number of others. The another bill that's up is AB 2943, and this is by Mr. Lowell out of Campbell, California, and this would basically use the consumer code to make it fraudulent for anyone to offer counseling for someone who's struggling with their sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, really? I mean, yeah. This is what we're going to do? I mean, that's the business of the professional licensing codes and the professions of of the state of California determine what is and isn't appropriate therapy.
Right.
Not the business of the legislature determine whether or not we're going to make certain types of counseling or certain representations of helping people fraudulent. So we're working with a number of partners on that and trying to oppose it, and it has some religious speech implications for us. So we're working on that particular bill. SB 1214 by Mr. Portantino, a Catholic gentleman from down in Pasadena area. He's doing our bill on with the California Federation of Teachers, our bill on a tax deduction for teachers, brand new teachers, to clear their credential.
Mm-hmm.
And with our teacher shortage, this is a very important bill. So far, it's sailed through with no opposition, but we need to continue to push it and get it in and get it funded. So we're working that piece of it. And then we have a civil liability for sex abuse bill, AB 3120, and that bill's over in the Senate. And so we're hoping to amend that bill in a way that it's fair to victims and also fair to us as the church, who stepped up and done what we've been expected to do for victims. So those, you know, four bills are the top of the list. There's obviously a whole list of them that people can check out, as always, on cacatholic.org.
Very, very good. And the tell us about the how people can sign up too for the news alerts.
Sure. Go right on cacatholic.org. You'll see a little button called Take Action. And when you hit that button, it'll ask you to plug in your name and address and your email address. And then it automatically links you to the senator in your area and the legislators in your area. And then allows you, when you're keeping yourself informed on our website and watching our weekly update, it allows you to respond. But, you know, when we invite you to do so by just hitting a button and sending a message to your legislator. So it's a way that the bishops have chosen to educate and empower our those of us who want to respond to God's call to evangelize this culture.
Ned, as you look back over those 31 years total representing the church, although I'm sure throughout your life you've represented the church in many, 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 many ways, but people get discouraged about politics and about being able to change a legislator's mind or the direction of their city government or their county or their state or their nation. Talk about how what individuals can do and what effect it does have when they're dealing with the Washington legislature or the California legislature.
Sure. I think we start from the premise that our role as disciples, and the only mission of the church is evangelization, and we're to evangelize individuals, to invite them into a relationship with the Lord. And we're also supposed to evangelize the culture within which they live, that the gospel speaks to that culture. And in our representative democracy, we do that through the political process. And so we have an obligation as disciples to keep ourselves informed and to make sure that we're forming our conscience so that we're faithful to what God's calling us to do in light of the gospel, to address public policy issues. We need to stay informed and we need to stay involved, whether we're Republican or Democrat or Independent or Green or whatever, you know, we feel God's calling us to use as a political expression to participate. But we need to participate. And so in the democratic process, that means it's speaking your mind. And it's a representative democracy. And if people don't tell their representatives what they want, they're not going to necessarily know what we need. And
Right. It's
a complex and challenging business, but, the bottom line for responsible politicians is to reflect the will of their constituency and to try and do the right thing. And we offer an opportunity for Catholics to have their voice and do that. And it's frustrating because politicians are influenced by the larger culture in which they live and by money. And so, we need to participate on a lot of levels. And we don't donate money as the church, but certainly individuals do. And the larger culture is our responsibility to engage and to keep ourselves involved with, too. From a very practical standpoint, we win some and we lose some. And the ones we... You know, the ones we win, we thank God. The ones we lose, we, I guess, understand that God's got another design for that and that we need to come back and address it in a different way. And so we're called to be faithful and do it with the best of our ability. And we do. And so, you know, it's a challenge, and it can be discouraging at times. And at the other times, it can, you know, you can say, oh, we all like to win. it's God's work, not our work. So we just do the best we can and participate in it. And,
so when people,
couldn't be more excited about it.
Yeah, when people write letters to, sometimes they write letters to the editor about their congressman or their state legislator, mm-hmm. or the mayor. When people overwhelm offices with phone calls, with postcards, with emails, text mm-hmm. messages, all this stuff, do they pay attention to that?
Well, by all means, certainly the personal conversation with the member staff is always, the most effective way that you, if you have the time, pick up the phone and call. If you don't, certainly use nowadays use the internet, use the Catholic Legislative Network to communicate, because every legislator invites has their members counting how many people are in favor and how many people are against. Mm-hmm. And they tell them that every day. And, we need to continually demonstrate that, that we have a voice on this, and that we have numbers of people on this, and the power of the legislative network is that when you sign up, you are a constituent. The legislator knows you live in their district, mm-hmm. and you vote for them. And so, the more numbers we get, the better off that is. And it's not everything, but it's certainly a significant piece of it. And so, I would say personal phone calls are always, very powerful. The internet and, letters are good. The problem with letters is that, sometimes they don't get delivered on time. And,
right.
the culture has changed a bit. And so people aren't as, they don't spend their time opening all those letters.
Right.
And
yeah.
So,
yeah.
But they're good. And then letters to the editor and participating in forming the culture is important. I mean, writing a letter to the editor and saying, hey, this is how this should be done, or this is my opinion mm-hmm. on that. Those are things that the legislators themselves and their staff people and their public relations people read. Say, oh, look at this. There's a number mm-hmm. of letters to the editor on that, or mm-hmm. there's an editorial in the local paper on that issue, or there's a comment challenging the editorial in there. And so, we invite our bishops to do that at various times and other selected Catholic folks, but it's always the purview of each one of us.
There's certainly a number of Catholics in the legislature, a number of Catholics in the Congress, a great number of Catholics in the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. I sometimes wonder, I think it was a couple of years ago, we actually, I think on the Supreme Court, had 6 Catholics and 3 Jewish, people identified as Jewish. And I thought to myself, I wonder what the founding fathers would have thought about that.
Well, it certainly reflects a cultural shift over
yes.
the course of time.
Yeah.
There was a time when there was the first Catholic. There was only one Catholic on there ages ago. So,
yeah,
it reflects a time. Catholics in public life is a wonderful thing. That's also very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Those Catholics are struggling with trying to form their conscience and engage also, and it's our responsibility to help them, to work with them, and to, challenge them when they're, in our estimation, they're not being faithful to the Catholic teaching.
Mm, yeah, indeed. And it seems that I don't have the exact breakdown, but it seems like the Catholics are spread through both political parties and relatively evenly.
Yeah. They are, and in the legislative process, it's one of the aspects that people don't reflect on. I mean, we are disproportionately represented in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably about 26% of the population in California.
Mm-hmm.
And, we're into the 30%
in the legislature.
Of
yeah.
representation in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And probably, pushing 40 or over 40% of the staff people.
Wow.
They come from, our Catholic colleges and universities. They come from the public universities and the
sure.
different centers. And part of the ethos of our Catholic faith is to do public service,
sure.
care about the common good. And so we're disproportionately represented in the police and the fire and the military. Right. You know, we have a coming out of our cultural context is the community and doing service to the common good. And so you're going to see a little more, in, you know, a little more engagement from Catholics in the public order. We need to continue to work that and view it as the gift of the Spirit that it is.
Ned, looking back, what were your biggest challenges in your job?
The biggest challenges in the job? Well, you know, certainly the largest challenge of all is the larger culture within which we live and work and, and where we move. And you know, that is, it has become a very individualistic culture. It's become a very materialistic culture. It's become a very hedonistic culture in many ways. Not too conducive of the sense of the common good. The individualism has, you know, has shown its colors and risen so dramatically. The sense of the community and the common good has become obscured. And from the Catholic standpoint, that's very challenging because we see the individual and we celebrate that individualism, but we see the individual always in the context of the community in which they live. And so for us, it's both and for the society, sometimes it's either or. And that's been challenging. It's, you know, and it certainly manifested itself in issues like, you know, the life issues of abortion, assisted suicide, and, you know, that we've been significantly engaged in, that it makes it challenging and on issues like immigration. And you know, I would say, you know, there's a number of things that have been over the course of time have been challenging. Dealing with assisted suicide, both in Washington State and here, has been challenging. And thank God we're at a new place, even though it's legal in California. The bishops and Catholic Healthcare are all in on a whole person care initiative. And while we'll continue to oppose the expansion of assisted suicide in the current law, we also have to use this moment to recognize that it's time for to make sure we're helping people deal with chronic and terminal illness and in a very, very positive way, that we're accompanying and walking with them so that no one needs to take advantage of this law. Right. So, you know, that's been both a challenge, certainly a challenge as you asked it, but it's also turning into a blessing. I think the struggling as we have over the decades with, you know, trying to rein in cultures like Washington State and California, the over-expansive understanding of the abortion culture has just been very, very challenging. Mm-hmm. Dealing with the civil liability was probably the most sobering of all of the experiences over the years. And you know, coming to grips with the mistakes made in our church, with the harm done to victims, with the need for healing, and to, you know, help us negotiate a way responsibly in the public order to address the needs of the victims, to change the culture that had caused these problems and to protect children. Again, has been the blessing that's come from that, but the political dynamic has been, you know, was certainly sobering and challenging.
Yeah. On the flip side, my next question was going to be what have been the most satisfying parts of the job?
You know, so many. You know, to see the growth of the Catholics engaged in the political order, the numbers of people, you know, 160,000-170,000 people on the Catholic Legislative Network. The response that we make to many things, the deep and thoughtful engagement of the Catholic Church on so many issues is a blessing. The privilege I've had to work with the bishops here, I mean, just couldn't have been more magnificent. I was reflecting with the death of Bishop Richard Garcia this last week, you know, a good friend and colleague and, you know, former officer on the conference. And we came in. He was appointed auxiliary bishop of Sacramento when I came into this arrangement, and we were together that first year. So that's poignant. But I was thinking, reflecting back on his passing and a new coadjutor bishop for San Jose, that every diocese in California has turned over leadership at least once in my tenure here, and so that's. You know, that's been interesting to reflect back on each of those bishops and how unique and talented and faith-filled they were and how committed and willing to work hand-in-hand with each other and be supportive and how much they care pastorally. And, and then the privilege to work with the staff and staff and colleagues. I mean, my staff at the conference and colleagues, some of them have been with me the entire time, and some of them have come and gone, but they've all been dedicated, and my colleagues in Catholic Healthcare and Catholic Charities have just been superb. So, you know, blessings all around. Yeah, I mentioned about the programmatic things that excite me right now, but blessings all around.
Yeah, indeed, and we all remember Bishop Garcia so well. And for those who haven't heard, Bishop Garcia passed away late last week, and July the 11th, I believe, was the actual date. And
correct, July 11th in the morning. Yeah,
yeah, and what a tremendous presence he was here in Sacramento, and a native of San Francisco, and then he was incarnated in San Jose. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. He got at the seminary there briefly, and then he became the auxiliary bishop here in Sacramento with us, and did such a marvelous job bringing his just pastoral presence, his gift for being with people, and his gentleness, bringing it to so many people across this diocese, and then, you know, stepping forward to lead Monterey. And
yeah.
I used to give him a bad time. Well, somebody's got to do it.
I think I teased him the same way.
Somebody's got to live in Monterey, you know, and see the beautiful countryside. But he was up and down that large diocese, and it's on so many of our hearts right now.
Yeah, I mean, the challenges he had. I mean, the enormous wealth in that area, and the enormous poverty, and
enormous poverty.
A lot of real, some real inner city problems, gang problems in Salinas area, and just. Mm-hmm. As something he really cared about. And I still remember he came up to Sacramento for some reason, and he dropped in on the radio and brought a big bag of artichokes.
Yep.
And dropped them off. And every time after that he would come to Sacramento, whether he came into the radio or not, he'd drop off a bag of artichokes for our family, you know. And I just always remember that, you know. It was just,
yes, and you know, those of us from the Sacramento diocese, you know, we can take heart that he's resting in the Lord, and we now have a saint there interceding for us. So
indeed,
throw some prayers his way for us. And
yes.
I know that he's already enjoying his presence with the Lord, and
yeah, well, that gives us great comfort, doesn't it? Yeah,
it does. We'll miss him immensely, but you know, his brief suffering from his illness is over, and, mm-hmm. and it's just now the rest of us have to figure out how we can continue to be as faithful as he was.
Yeah, indeed, very, very well said. Well, Ned, thanks. Thanks for everything you do. I hope our paths continue to cross. I hope we continue to have conversations on the radio, maybe about other subjects. And
definitely. I would. I'm going to be working. I was talking to Bishop Soto. I'm going to be working on a volunteer effort here with our evangelical and LDS colleagues on the speaker series over the next couple of years.
Oh, very good.
I'd love to come on sometime and we'll share what's going to evolve and how it's going to evolve, and how we as Catholics can work hand in hand with our evangelical and LDS brothers and sisters to evangelize our culture right here. So
very good. We just had John Fish on the program recently. His retirement from the Interfaith Council.
Yes, but he's going to stay involved in this project I'm talking about. So I guess a few of us retired folks are going to do that.
Very good. Well, I can tell you, my mom said. She was never so busy as the time she retired.
Yeah, well, I remember my dad too. Even when he retired as a mechanic and a mechanic for Boeing, he spent his time working for St. Vincent de Paul.
Oh, wow!
And you know, he bought himself a little truck and he drove around and helped these women with their children and getting the stuff they needed and everything. And I remember asking him one day. I said, "Dad, I said, why are you spending so much time doing that in your retirement?" He said, "Well, when I was a young boy in the Depression, I had to live in this little one-bedroom apartment with my mom and my brother and my sister, and we were so poor, my mom was taking it in. I always said to myself, when I have the time, I'm going to work with those women."
Wow.
And so I said, wow, that's what I said too.
Boy, that's beautiful.
So we each call to find out where we're supposed to keep responding and how we maintain faithfulness. But, you know, this partnership and you know, the opportunity to be with you and to share with our listeners this part of the journey has also been one of the special things, Bob, so thank you.
Oh, it's been special for us too, Ned. Thank you so much, and I know we'll talk again soon.
You got it.
All right. Thanks. God bless. That's Ned DeLessie, Executive Director of the California Catholic Conference, and we'll be retiring, but we will be sure and keep him as a regular guest on this program as he continues to serve the church in this area. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on a Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hi, I'm John McGinnis, retired sheriff of Sacramento County, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Welcome back. Appreciate you all being with us, and thanks, Sheriff McGinnis, for all you've done in this area during your tenure as sheriff. Now, talk show host on KFBK. Ministry Days 2018, ministrydays.com is the way to learn all about it. A lot of great things happening at St. Francis Catholic High School, Friday, September 28th, Saturday, September 29th. You get to pick your workshops that you wish to attend, a number of great workshops being offered, some great keynote speakers, Dr. Hoffman Ospino, and also Father Robert Spitzer, two really dynamic speeches. So it'll be great, a great event coming up at St. Francis Catholic High School in Sacramento, September 28th, a Friday, September 29th, a Saturday. You can come to one day or both days. Most people come to one day, but you're certainly welcome to come to both days. Holy Mass both days as well, and lunch is included. Go to ministrydays.com. Well, we're pleased to be joined by Tony Ryan, the marketing director for Ignatius Press. Tony joins us by phone from the great city of Napa. Tony, good day.
Bob, how are you?
Very, very good. We got the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae and the 40th anniversary of Ignatius Press.
Isn't that amazing? A lot of great anniversaries coming up here.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. That's remarkable.
It is remarkable. We're actually celebrating both because we published the document, the encyclical, but we also have a number of great books connected with Humanae Vitae and also even films. So we're really celebrating that anniversary as well as our own, which we're going to speak about here. But yeah, it's a great year. It's a great year for the church.
Indeed. I love the fact that I know there are a number of conferences going on, and a big one here in California, 27th and 28th
right.
of July at the Ontario
right.
Convention
yeah,
Center.
Yeah, I hope your listeners know about that. Maybe you've had some guests on about it.
We have, and continue to as we get closer. The speaker lineup is just a who's who, Mike.
Yeah, it's an all-star lineup for sure. I mean, George Weigel and Janet Smith.
Janet Smith and Patrick Coff and Christopher West and, of course, Archbishop Corleone and just on and on and on.
Yeah,
Steve Patton
fantastic.
From the Diocese of Sacramento here. And, I mean, I'm looking at the sheet, and there's about 50 faces looking back at me. It's just amazing. We had Dr. Janet Smith on the other day. And,
oh, good.
Yeah, just some great speakers.
It is a great year for the church to kind of renew people's Catholics' understanding, awareness, learning of Humanae Vitae, and really appreciation of it. And and of course, Pope Paul VI is going to be, as you know, going to be canonized in the fall.
Yes, yeah. You know, my guess is people reading it today who are all confused about so much of this stuff pick up Humanae Vitae and say, wow, where did this come from?
That's right. So many have never even been exposed to it.
Yep.
Once people read it, and if their hearts or minds are open at all to truth and beauty, they're going to say, wow, how come I never heard about this?
Mm-hmm.
What's the big problem here? This is beautiful.
Yeah, it's great stuff. For those who just tuned in and said, oh, there's a conference going on, celebratehv50.com. That's how to sign up at the Ontario Convention Center. That's in Southern California, not in Canada. There's special rates at the Doubletree there. And
it starts which day, Bob?
Well, the basic conference is the 27th and 28th, but there are some pre-conference events beginning on July 25th as well.
That's great.
So it can run all the way from the 25th through among the conferences are reproductive medicine,
yeah.
Institute for Restorative and Reproductive Medicine, 25th and 26th, the American Academy of Fertility Care Professionals. Clergy Day will be July the 26th, including Archbishop Corleone and Janet Smith. And then the main conference, the 27th and 28th.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to try to get down there for that?
I'm going to try.
Good.
A lot going on. We are going to have a number of guests on during National NFP Week, which is that final week of July as well.
Great.
So
Talk, before we get on to our anniversary, one other thing about that conference is we're going to be premiering a film at it called Unprotected. So it's a documentary about Humanae Vitae, done by a filmmaker named Don Johnson. So we're the studio for it, or the producer, executive producer of Don Johnson's a great Catholic filmmaker. He made another film called Convinced, which was a great documentary about Catholic converts. A lot of well-known Catholic converts, so he's been working on this film Unprotected for maybe last year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be there at the conference. Don is to have a premiere of that film, and then we're going to try to do some screenings around the country before we release it on DVD. But again, this is all in connection with the anniversary of Humanae Vitae.
Oh, very good. Very good. We'll look for it. Now, you are going to have a conference yourself.
Well, this is our 40th year of Ignatius Press. So we began in 1978. Father Joseph Fascio founded Ignatius Press. So it's our 40th anniversary, so God has blessed us in so many incredible ways. So we wanted to have a big celebration to thank God for that and to bring in all of our, all of our friends, all of our, patrons, all of our great people that bought our products over all the years. So it's going to be on the 2nd and 3rd of November, Friday, November 2nd in the evening, and then November 3rd all day Saturday. It'll be at St. Mary's Cathedral in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. They have a great event center in the basement of that huge church. So we're going to have the conference events, talks, etc., dinner in the event center, which is big and beautiful, and then we'll have our masses in the cathedral itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will have some of our most popular and longtime authors speaking at it, including Father Robert Spitzer, the great Jesuit, Stephen Ray, the great filmmaker, Footprints of God, and also author, Michael O'Brien, the great novelist, Peter Kraft, the great all-around writer, philosopher, and then Cardinal Francis Arinze, the great churchman from Africa, who's also an author of Ignatius Press, and then, of course, our own great founder, Father Joseph Fessio. So they're going to be speaking they will be speaking Friday night at the dinner, and then we'll have Archbishop Corleone as well. So he's going to be introducing and kind of hosting the dinner for us, and then Cardinal Arinze and Father Fessio will speak at the dinner on Friday night at the cathedral, and then Saturday we start at, with morning prayer at 7:45, Mass at 8, celebrated by Archbishop Corleone and Cardinal Arinze, and Cardinal Arinze will be the homilist at that, and then we go through the day with these different authors that I just mentioned who will be giving talks on great subjects, and we close at around 4:30 for that day on Saturday. So November 2nd and November 3rd, and your listeners can get your tickets online at ignatius.com/40, the number 40. So we're doing this all online, and it's all set up. It's pretty turnkey deal. Just go to ignatius.com/40 to purchase your tickets, and the seats, of course, are limited, so we encourage people to do it as soon as possible.
So, I'm looking over all this list, and I think the only person I've been blessed, the only person I have never talked to, I believe, is Cardinal Arinze. Father Fessio, of course, has been a regular guest. Father Spitzer has been most generous with his time. You call him up, and he's coming up to Catholic Ministry Days here in Sacramento.
Yeah, he's
in September.
Oh, he's a man full of zeal.
Oh, first time I talked to him, he was still at Gonzaga, and it was the middle of the NCAA basketball tournament. Oh boy,
you were lucky to get him then.
I was lucky to get him then. I think he was courtside.
I'm sure he was.
And Peter Kraft, of course. Just such a down, for a guy as intelligent as he is, he's so down to earth, and he's just straight out funny.
Very funny guy. Peter Kraft's very funny. And, of course, he's been teaching college students for decades and decades, so he's in touch with reality in that regard every day. And the students love him. He's been voted the most popular teacher and a very solid Catholic. And then as Steve Ray, of course, is so popular, what a great convert he is. And there's another man with great zeal, and of course he has the Footprints of God film series that has been so amazing. And then Michael Bryan, the great novelist, probably the most well-known Catholic novelist in the world today. I mean, he's done, I think, 11 novels that we've published, and Father Elijah, the most famous one. But he's also an artist. I mean, he's probably even more, considers himself more of an artist than a writer, so he's got that great combination, so we're just honored to be connected with all these great men and have them all together for this great celebration. I'm hoping to see you there so we can meet you in person, and also your great producer, Gabe. I told Gabe we'd like to meet both of you in person and come on over to San Francisco and celebrate with us.
I don't know if you want Gabe at the dinner. You may have to serve him 3 or 4 times.
Well, I mean, whatever it takes. I'm sorry that you guys aren't, feeding him as well as he should be fed. We'll see if we can make up for that.
Very good. Tony, looking back on 40 years, are there things that you publish and you think, okay, this satisfies a certain thing, we publish things for a certain reason, and the thing just exploded on you?
Well,
in a good way?
Sure. I mean, first of all, just the fact that Ignatius Press got started and even exists today is kind of a miracle. I mean, Father Fessio, he came back after studying in Europe for 6 years as a young Jesuit to get his doctorate, and he studied under three of the greatest theologians of the 20th century and maybe in the history of the Church, Hans Urs von Balthasar, Henry de Lubac, the great Jesuit, and then, of course, Joseph Ratzinger, who became Benedict XVI. So, after being around those men under their tutelage for 6 years and seeing all their great works in Europe but not many available in English in America, he thought, well, if I could start a publishing house to make their works available, I'm going to try to do it. And so he came back to teach. I mean, that's what he did. That's what Jesuits generally do is that when they get all that formation, they come back and teach. So he came and taught at the University of San Francisco, and then he started, of course, the St. Ignatius Institute, which is an amazing accomplishment, a great books program. But on the side, quote, on the side, unquote, he started this publishing house on his own. He had to raise money on his own. He had to find translators. He had to try to find some office space in San Francisco that was free. I mean, you know, and this is what great Jesuits are able to do. You know, they think big and they accomplish big things. And he didn't know if it could work or not. Mm-hmm. And again, he didn't do it through the Jesuits. He just did it on his own. And here we are. You know, and he wanted to make these scholars available. Well, those don't sell well. I mean, you know, how's that going to work financially? I mean, they're great churchmen and great works, but they're not popular books. And that's really what he started doing. And here we are now 40 years later. We've published every kind of book under the sun in connection with Catholicism, every category, you know, from great works of theology and philosophy and scripture down to novels and children's books and even coloring books.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a million great stories there. I remember there was this young Catholic Protestant convert who was making a name for himself, and we said, well, your story ought to be published, and it was called Rome, Sweet Home.
Mm.
You know, so Scott Hahn has become, you know, perhaps the most big-name, prolific, widely impacting convert in America.
Oh, yeah.
And that book continues to be a bestseller every year, Rome, Sweet Home. It just astounds us how that book just sells, you know, bestseller every year. And Scott, as we know, has published, you know, dozens of books since then. But, you know, I mean, Michael O'Brien is another example. Here we didn't even know who he was, never heard of him. And someone suggested he send these works of fiction that he was writing and sharing with his friends to Ignatius Press. So he did, and we looked at him. We're going, wow, this guy is an amazing writer. He's so beautifully, he writes such beautiful language, such descriptive, so combines the, you know, the fictional with the spiritual. And so we picked out Father Elijah, I think, out of the three, and then boom, you know, he became a big name. So
were those the first novels you published?
We actually published a few before that, like historical novels on saints by Lewis DeWall. You know, that's another author that he's, of course, not living, but we brought a lot of his books back. You know, he wrote those in the 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s. So we had a few of his published before Michael O'Brien, but Michael kind of opened the floodgates for us in terms of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've done a lot of novels in the last 20 years, a lot of novels.
So what have been the biggest sellers?
Well, Rome, Sweet Home is one of them. Mm-hmm. Another amazing work is Catholicism and Fundamentalism by Carl Keating, the founder of Catholic Answers.
Right.
You know, that's another great story. He was a lawyer, is a lawyer. You know, he just got these pamphlets on his car windshield at his church when he was at Mass by Protestants trying to take Catholics away from the Catholic Church. And he thought, well, we got to do something to counter this. This is, you know, so he just wrote up something himself and put it around in the parish, kind of countering that. And that led to him founding Catholic Answers and then his seminal work, Catholicism and Fundamentalism, we published, I don't know, 25 years ago. It's been a bestseller. You know, Joseph Ratzinger, we did Jesus of Nazareth, which was a New York Times bestseller, his great work on our Lord. You know, we've had a lot of great books. I mean, we have so many great authors. Peter Kraft is incredible.
I mean,
he's had a number of bestsellers. He's incredibly prolific. You know, so it's a wide list, and we're honored that we've been able to be associated with so many great writers, both living and deceased.
Wow, so you're bringing a lot of them together all at once. That's pretty impressive.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, we've never been short on manuscripts. I mean, you know, we get some years unsolicited 400 or 500 manuscripts sent to us, and we look at them all. We have an editing team that looks at them all, and you know, then there's other manuscripts that we were actually developed with our authors. We work with our authors on top of that, so. You know, it's never an issue of not having enough to publish. It's really trying to figure out what we can handle. And oftentimes, well, not oftentimes, but many times when a book we just don't think it's right for us. It's a good book, but it's, you know, or we can't, for whatever reason, we can't publish it. Mm-hmm. It gets published by other publishers, which, you know, we're happy about.
Right, right. Do you have to make a financial call on a book every time?
I mean, whether it's financially worth it to publish
it? Yeah.
Well, in the early early years, Father didn't even think about that. He just said, we're going to do books that are important for the church, and you know, we'll just trust in God's providence. But now we've got more. That's definitely part of the decision. Mm-hmm. You know, how you know, is this book going to at least pay for itself? I mean, any book we publish at Ignatius Press, we think is an important book. We think it's a good book. We think it should be out there.
Sure.
So that's the main thing. But then, of course, we have to think, well, will it sell enough? Will it at least break even? We've had a lot of books that in the past that, you know, did break even, but we did them anyways because they were important and are important, and some of them are still in print. So, yeah, that's definitely part of the decision when we publish a book.
Yeah, fortunately, you have a you're not like all most publishing houses where it tends to be the only decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, but on the other end, we keep our books in print much longer than other publishers, secular or Catholic. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you know, once we publish a book, we do it because, as I say, we think it's an important book that should be published, and so then our goal is to keep it around as long as possible. So we'll continue doing reprints on very small reprint numbers, which is a lot of publishers, they just don't do that. You know, we'll keep a book around and reprint, you know, 300 or 400 copies at a time just to keep it in print. And financially, that's cutting it close in terms of unit cost and margins and all that. But again, we're about a mission. We have a mission as a Catholic publisher, and it's to make great works available for Catholics. And you know, it's not about making money. You got to make money to stay in business. We understand that, but you know, we want to be a great you know, arm of the church for promoting the faith.
And even though people can order direct from you at Ignatius.com, I know you're a big promoter of Catholic bookstores, too.
Couldn't do it without them. And, you know, we're so grateful for all those great dedicated Catholic store owners who are out there really in the trenches, as we know, in the front lines, where the rubber meets the road. So, yeah, we always encourage people, first and foremost, please find your see if you have a local Catholic store, a local Catholic gift shop, a parish bookstore, you know, and sometimes people find out, oh, I didn't know we had one here.
Mm-hmm.
And make even driveways to go patronize them because they deserve it and they need it. But if you just don't have one, then, of course, you can go to our website at Ignatius.com or call our toll-free number, 800-651-1531. Yeah.
The 1531 is the easy part to remember.
And why is that, Bob? Tell me.
It's something to do with a guy named Juan Diego.
Hey, way to go.
Saint Juan Diego.
Get that down, yeah. And a woman named Our Lady Guadalupe, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a great meeting that year.
Indeed they did.
And by the way, I'll just mention also that the other thing we've been blessed with, besides these great authors and books, are films. You know, so, yes, you know, right. we had no thought about doing anything in films when we started, and not even for our first, I don't know, 15 years. But then, you know, films start being made available on VHS. You know,
mm-hmm.
Remember good old VHS
yes.
video? I mean, that's not that long ago, really, in the big picture. But it seems, you know, it just seems so antiquated. But once a studio started making films available where people could actually own them, which was a whole new breakthrough, you know, then we started deals with studios, getting accounts with these studios to make buy and sell some of the great films that had Catholic themes in them, Catholic stories, etc. And then we started licensing our own films for our own ownership from studios, mainly in Europe, on these Lives of the Saints. And then producing some, like with Steve Rafe with Prince of God and some other documentaries. So that's become a big part of our work at Ignatius Press.
Wow. It's quite a remarkable story. Give the dates again. So November 2
and 3. Yeah, so our
40th
anniversary. Yeah, Friday, November 2nd in the evening with a dinner at St. Mary's Cathedral. Archbishop Corleone, Cardinal Rinzai, and Father Fessio will be speaking, and then it'll be a great meal. And then Saturday, all day, on November 3rd, we start with morning prayer and Mass at 8 or 7:45, and then registration right after that. If you've registered online, well, then it'll just be give us your ticket or whatever. But and then we have talks all during the day, and there's a little break for lunch, and there's opportunities for people to get their lunch. We don't have a dinner on Saturday. We finish right before dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So Ignatius.com/40 is how you can get your tickets. limited seating. We're encouraging people to buy them soon because I think with this great lineup we have, we'll probably sell out.
Oh, I'm sure you will.
And again, I hope to see you and Gabe there, and we'll have enough food for Gabe.
Very good. Very good. Tony, thanks so much for joining us. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for all you do, and we'll look forward to our paths crossing again soon.
I hope so. Thank you, and thanks to all the great work you're doing, and keep it up.
We sure will. Thanks,
all right.
Tony.
All right, Bob.
So yeah, on. God bless. That's Tony Ryan, Marketing Director for Ignatius Press. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates. Underwriting for the Bishop's Hour is provided by Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, a ministry of the Diocese of Sacramento. As a church-owned nonprofit founded in faith, Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services is dedicated to providing education, support, and resources during life's most difficult moments. They will make every effort to enable you to realize your final wishes while empowering families to make completely informed decisions. You can give them a call. They are at 855-525-2285. That's 855-525-2285. We're also brought to you by a generous grant from Christine Cipperly, Marriage and Family Therapist. If you're looking for help with family or personal problems, if you'd like help from someone with a Catholic point of view, someone who understands the importance of marriage and family and affirms the dignity of every human life, Christine Cipperly is a trained and experienced counselor of married couples, families, and individuals. She can work with you on your marriage, your parenting, or your individual struggles in a way that will not violate our faith. Christine is a wonderful, wonderful therapist. Give her a call. She's at 530-400-4757. That's 530-400-4757. We'd like to thank Christine Cipperly and Catholic Cemeteries and Funeral Services for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening, everyone. God bless. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Underwriting for the Bishop's Hour is provided by
Greetings. This is Bishop Jaime Soto from the Diocese of Sacramento, inviting the faithful of California to join the Catholic Legislative Network, CLN. CLN subscribers receive our free weekly email, Public Policy Insights, where you'll stay up to date on the key public policy issues happening in California and what we as people of faith can do about it. You will also receive periodic action alerts, which make it easier for you to voice your opinion on crucial issues to your elected officials. Join today at www.scd.org/joinCLN. That's www.scd.org/joinCLN. Together, we can be a voice for life and dignity right here in California. May God bless you.